Welcome to the ANews Podcast. This is episode 15 for June 9th. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Some thoughts on prisoner support from an ex-social worker. There's so much to say about prisons, prisoners, and prisoner support, and while this editorial is focused on prisoner support, they're all connected, so bear with me. Prison support brings up a lot of difficult threads, including activity by anarchists that looks like social work, i.e., it deals with state bureaucracies and involves activity that is not demonstrably anarchist. It's arguably the hardest of what could be called entry-level anarchist activity, projects like Food Not Bombs, Critical Mass, Reclaim the Streets, etc. It doesn't take a high level of sophistication to start and isn't necessarily conducive to theoretical enrichment. It tends to be emotionally exhausting as the need is deep and ongoing, a need that will probably only increase as the state continues to stretch the boundaries of how long and what they can sentence people to. Prison support has been under-theorized, despite some very good writing on prisons and prisoners. The one exception that I know of is the perspective in the popular slogan, "Solidarity means attack," meaning that the best way to support people is to take aggressive action. And of course, attack is wide open, so it could mean going after the prison holding someone, or attacking the social system or an institution targeted by a prisoner, among other possibilities. The point being to weaponize support. Of course, what's most helpful is usually a combination of both personal contact and attack, and there's an argument that personal contact, refusing to allow the isolation of people who are warehoused away from their family and friends and cohorts, is also attack. One change in perspective that might support a more consistent and appropriate connection between anarchists outside and those inside is the acknowledgement that we are all likely to end up inside sooner or later, or sooner and later. This can encourage realism about that both logistically, who will take care of your kids or your cat, who will be your main support person, how will you deal with any chronic medical issues, and emotionally, what will you do to stay connected to the outside, how will you continue the work you care about from inside, how will you stay strong in isolation and under constant surveillance. It's also true that the more we're prepped for time inside, the less hold the cops will have over us when they threaten us. And people who are inside already can be very helpful in giving us realistic stories of what being inside is like, versus the stereotypes we get through mass culture, which mostly treats going to prison as the end of the story. We should support the supporters. If prisoners are generally underappreciated and invisible, the people who support them can be even more so. Many work alone and feel like they hold the weight of someone's connection to the world. This doesn't have to be a big thing. If someone has a support person, when you send the prisoner a letter, you can send a card to their support, too. When you pick a prisoner to connect with, have some criteria. Not everyone will be a good match. Obviously, one of the reasons to do prisoner support is to build a strong, or stronger, relationship with someone you respect. You will never help all the people who need help, and thinking that way will just keep you from starting or make you burn out. Pick people you think you'll like, or people who are local who you could visit, or people who got popped for something you really care about, or people who don't get much attention, and so on. There are also many ways that you can support someone. Sending books, sending cartoons, doing benefits of a dozen different types, making leaflets with information, making pamphlets telling people about a prisoner, organizing and or going to letter writing groups, doing art about anarchist prisoners in general and or some specific people. One way that isn't obvious is to go to the prison when someone is getting out, making sure they have a working phone, taking a charger, for example, and at least a t-shirt. Sometimes people get released in paper gowns. And water and snacks, maybe giving them bus fare or a ride somewhere. Consider letting your pen pal know what your reading group is reading and getting them a copy. They can write down their thoughts on the reading and those can be read aloud in the group. So many options. Remember, anarchist prisoners are a pool of people who frequently have plenty of time to read and think, and they're dedicated enough to have risked themselves. It is better for all of us when we minimize the walls between inside and outside. What's new this week? The abolition of rulership or the rule of all over all. This is a piece by William Gillis, who tends to be wordy, on why democracy is not anarchist and is not consistent with anarchy. Quote, If anarchism is to mean anything of substance, it is surely not merely an opening bid from which you are happy to settle. Anarchy doesn't stand for small amounts of domination, it stands for no domination. Although our approach to that ideal will surely be asymptotic, the whole point of anarchism is to actually pursue it, rather than give up and settle for some arbitrary, good enough, half measure. Such tepid aspirations is what has historically defined liberals and social democrats in contrast to us. Unquote. It is occasionally funny, at least in the beginning, and has some decent points, including how people argue in bad faith. I wish he'd follow his own advice a bit more.
From Greece, solidarity with Eric King from Athens. An action in Exarchia in memory of Mauricio Morales, who died from premature explosion of a bomb, and in support of Eric King in prison for cocktailing a government building in 2014. June 28th is the day for international actions in support of Eric.
June 11th, Our Words Are Our Weapons by Sean Swain. For June 11th, there was a theme for writing by prisoners, and this essay is Sean's response. Given how long he's been inside, he remains remarkably on point and remarkably active. Quote, "The fact of the matter is, our enemy systems are not perpetual. They will not go on forever. The fact is, humans have been around for about 4 million years, and this hierarch delusion has been foisted upon us for roughly 8,000 years. That's a fraction of 1% of human existence. That means that humans lived in other ways for the vast majority of our existence. Further, after only 8,000 years, this hierarch delusion is falling apart. Their own experts use terms like unsustainable, which means it cannot keep going. It has, in a very short time, done great damage not only to the environment, to the planet we inhabit, but devastated our ability to live lives of general happiness and purpose. So, this system is not just unraveling before our very eyes, but it is a system we really have no reason to keep around anyway, because it has never worked as advertised, and it never will." Unquote. The full essay is available for download as a PDF.
Brazil, an anarchist analysis of Occupy Brasilia, 24th of May, 2017. From Insurrection News, this is a report back from actions in Brazil against austerity measures and fueled by rejection of the new president and his alleged corruption. The previous president was impeached for corruption as well. Quote, "It is worth noting that during the protests, in the widespread riots on the streets against all aspects of domination and its ills, the resistance of Badernirxis, hooded ones, the offensive of the vandals became a firm reality, present and prepared. To people who have abandoned the role of citizens and articulate themselves as enemies of authority, state, capital, and its suicidal pace of progress, the scenes and experiences of defiance against power in these journeys are enthusiastic, symbolic, disorderly, chaotic, unexpected, and so beautiful. Like seeing the Ministry of Agriculture, that den of agribusiness, greeted with the flames of revolt wrapped in the black smoke of fire." Unquote.
Interview with Grace from Jeremy Hammond Support. This is an interview with someone who's done support for Jeremy since 2014. The interview talks about how everything is connected, how important it is to do the work that is not glamorous. Editorial aside, usually women are the ones who end up doing the long-term support, so consider that. And that continues even after the headlines have disappeared. There's a bit about the British prisoner Lowry Love, who is under-supported and has health issues that would make prison especially difficult. One of the nice things about supporting prisoners is that there are many ways to do it, from money to books to letters to comics to events to benefits to educational house parties, etc. So it can take as much or as little time as you have in a month. Adopt an anarchist prisoner today, and thank an anarchist prisoner support person today. They are usually unsung heroes.
Anarchism or Vanguardism, Critique of Guerrilla Ideology of the IRPGF. From the freeonline.wordpress.com, this is a thoughtful response to IRPGF, questioning some of the points made in the many interviews that the Rajavan group did. For example, here is a quote from one of those interviews. Quote, "IRPGF, there is no general formula for how much armed struggle is necessary to initiate and advance the revolutionary process, nor at which point it should commence, if at all. For the IRPGF, we recognize that each group, collective, community, and neighborhood must ultimately decide when they initiate armed struggle. Armed struggle is contextual to the specific location and situation. For example, whereas throwing a Molotov cocktail at police is fairly normalized in the Exarchia neighborhood in Athens, Greece, in the United States, the person throwing it would be shot dead by the police. each particular local context has a different threshold for what the state allows in terms of violence. However, this is not an excuse for inaction. We believe that armed struggle is necessary, unquote. The author responds, quote, "So in one breath they say there is no general rule for how much, if any, armed struggle is needed, and then in the next it's back to just armed struggle is necessary, not necessary in certain situations where the energy of the insurrectionary forces have failed to sufficiently paralyze the old state. Just necessary, full stop. This kind of stuff really is no different to dogmatic pacifism. The magic ingredient might be armed struggle instead of nonviolence, but the insistence that no recipe is complete without a good sprinkling of their favored nostrum is the same." Unquote. This post was also notable for an entirely civil and to-the-point exchange between three anonymouses, one of whom posted the story to A-News, and another of whom wrote the blog post in the first place. Always nice when that happens.
Italy. About the investigations against Radio Azione Anarchica.info and the Croce Nera Anarchica. This is a short post from Anarchica.info about political police investigating some anarchist media and web projects in Italy. Quote, "The intentions are quite clear, to do everything to isolate, furthermore, the anarchist comrades imprisoned for scriptum anent, but the gravedigger on duty can put his soul at rest because there will never be a step back." Unquote.
Review of Jonathan Matthew Smucker, Hegemony How To, A Roadmap for Radicals. It's fair to say that most current anarchist tendencies can be categorized as either social change or personal change. Those labels are shorthand, so don't fall in love with them. This post from Alpine Anarchist at alpineanarchist.org, praising Smucker's book, is definitely supporting the social change perspective. Quote, "Perhaps related to the above, it is sometimes not entirely clear who Smucker is talking for and who he is talking to. Early on, he explains, I use the pronoun we, without hesitation throughout the book, to refer to groups and movements of which I am a part, and also to refer to a far larger we, the project of society itself. It's good to be all-inclusive, but vagueness on that level can leave folks wondering where a critique is coming from and where it is heading. I asked myself that several times while reading Hegemony How To." Unquote. We do know the problems with trying to use systems tools to change the system. We also know problems with overemphasizing personal growth or satisfaction. And some of us might just have a knee-jerk reaction to the word hegemony. Ew.
Informant alert, round two. Andrew Darst attempting contact. Darst has reached out to someone in the scene that he worked against. Quote, "Darst infiltrated the Twin Cities-based anarchist organization, the RNC Welcoming Committee, in 2007. He used that position both to aid in a Minnesota state felony conspiracy case against the RNC 8 and to entrap an individual, Matt DePalma, in a federal case that landed DePalma a 42-month federal prison sentence." Unquote. So be warned. And if you want to see a picture of him, it's on anarchistnews.org.
Summer Camp, the Institute for Advanced Troublemaking. From advancedtroublemaking.wordpress.com, this is an announcement of a week-long anarchist theory and action camp from August 11th through 18th in Worcester, Massachusetts. Quote, "Our long-term goal for the IAT is to create a lasting anarchist education hub in the Northeast that can train new and old organizers alike beyond the basics in anarchist theory, organizing, and revolutionary movement building. We want to escalate and build skills in direct action, infrastructure building, and community organizing. We have seen the need for our movements to develop a more cohesive and strategic outlook for the days ahead, building innovative new strategies that can present a revolutionary challenge to the state, capitalism, and systemic violence." Unquote. Workshops so far are Decolonizing Anarchism, Burn Down the American Plantation, Everyday Anarchism with Cindy Milstein, Understanding Anarchism in the 21st Century, Art and Social Movements, Anarchist Orientation and Grassroots Organizing with Todd May, Radical Fabrication, Printmaking and Making Things, Exploring Accountability, Boundaries and Consent, and so on.
Confronting the Nationalists and Their Police. From Crime Think, a report back from the counter-protest in Portland after the racist murders on the bus. This is a play-by-play, most dramatic when the cops decide to attack the anti-fascists for no reason that stemmed from the Antifa folks. Quote, their official line was that unidentified people in black were collecting bricks from the top of a park bathroom, so they moved in to prevent the throwing of bricks. Conveniently, they timed their attack on the anti-fascist rally to take place half an hour before the nationalist rally was set to end. The park in which the nationalists were gathering was surrounded on all sides by counter-demonstrators. Presumably, the police concluded that the only way to prevent roving street brawls was to push back the most militant opposition, opening space for the patriots to disperse safely. Unquote.
June 11th, Let's Communicate by Michael Kimball. The second of the essays by Prisoners for June 11th, this brief message reminds us of how important it is for anarchist prisoners to have links to the outside. Quote, communication means more than receiving letters and publications. It means survival. It means resistance. It means saving lives on the margins of prison society. Through communication and acts of solidarity, I've been able to save the lives of queer and non-queer prisoners whose life was threatened because of debts and, yes, drugs for the sick and funds sent to me by comrades on more than one occasion. Without communication, none of this would have been possible. Unquote. Write an anarchist prisoner today.
Dixie Be Damned, but damn everything, too. This interview with the authors of Dixie Be Damned is from website thenewinquiry.com, which says about itself that it wants to build a left that doesn't reproduce what it critiques. Dixie Be Damned has been well received among anarchists and is about anarchism in the U.S. South. Quote, interviewer, the Great Dismal Swamp Maroons are variously pilloried or valorized for what some see as autonomy and others deride as escapism. But Dixie reveals that actually neither narrative is true. The Maroons had an extensive relationship to plantation society. Neil, to talk about the Great Dismal Swamp Maroons as escapists misses the point. They played a pivotal role in spreading a culture of resistance among slave plantations and even small-time racially ambiguous proletarian folks. The Maroons actively attacked plantation economies, and their semi-autonomy enabled them to go back and attack the society they had escaped from. Sarah Lee. Yeah, the very concept of separate or outside feels myopic. Just as there is no outside capitalism, there was no outside Southern plantation society. There were fringes and borders that people defended stable community out of plantations. Because of regular fights between slave owners and Maroons, the semi-autonomous camps were even forced to shift location every few years. So the struggle was not to build an outside, but to build places of refuge that facilitate attack. Unquote.
Solidarity with the anarchists and anti-authoritarians charged with terrorism by the Belgian state. A post from Bordered by Silence. This is a text from a solidarity group based in Brussels. It is another of too many indications of where the courts in the Western world are going with anarchist legal cases. Quote, the invention of a terrorist group that would be responsible for all of these acts, even just by having made them possible, allows for some amazing contortions to further the charges. A library becomes a site of recruitment. Discussions become secret meetings. Texts and journals advancing an anarchist critique become manuals for urban guerrilla warfare. Demos and rallies become calls for terrorism. Relationships of affinity between people in struggle and the self-organization this can lead to become a structured terrorist group. The invention of an anarchist terrorist group is obviously a clumsy attempt by the state to reduce anti-authoritarian and revolutionary subversion to the work of a single structured group. By trying to lock up a handful of troublesome anarchists, the state seeks to discourage intransigents from moving to direct action against that which oppresses and exploits them, that seeks to absolutely quell the desires, possibilities, reflections, and critiques that rise up against this authoritarian world. Unquote.
News from Nowhere, an interview with Alexander Reed Ross. News from Nowhere interviews Ross about his new book in an interview that mostly addresses historical fascism. The interviewer is knowledgeable about the history also and definitely leavens the post-grad history lecture vibe. Toward the end, Ross demonstrates his ability to mash things together that people don't like and call it fascism.
Urgent support needed for Mexican anarchist prisoner Fernando Barcenas. A young Mexican anarchist who needs money soon to avoid staying in an extra year and a half. Quote, as Fernando says, we as anarchists can do work in society, whatever society we find ourselves in. Right now I'm in prison and I'm going to do work here. As such, he has consistently fought against the conditions inside Mexican prisons, going on four separate hunger strikes, including one in solidarity with the national prisoner strike in the U.S. in 2016. Unquote.
The anarchist revolt against the ideology of not voting is finally taking shape in 2017. From filmsforaction.org, which has nothing to say about itself, this blog post from the UK argues that it's impractical and elitist to refuse to vote. The point of the post is to encourage people to vote in the snap election in Britain. Instead of writing much themselves, the author does a brief intro explaining his position and then reprints a lot of threads with anti-voting posts and responses to them. Is this how one wins on the internet?
Who are the anarchists and what is anarchism? From Black Rose Federation, this is an Anarchy 101 essay that reiterates that anarchists aren't for disorder and chaos and are for direct democracy, cooperation, and solidarity. Oh, and communism, the working class, and prefigurative politics. It would be nice if any of these Let's Explain Anarchy to the Masses efforts would at least acknowledge that anarchists may be for peace, love, and understanding, and for chaos and disorder. Our breadth is amazing.
An introduction to the affinity group. From Plain Words at plainwordsbloomington.noblogs.org, this short piece is an encouragement to understand and get into affinity groups with a list at the bottom on more things to read. Quote, affinity groups are simple. They are a vehicle for like-minded people to do things together. Things like wheat-pasting propaganda around town, reading and discussing texts, navigating a demonstration, sabotaging gentrification efforts, learning a skill together, or working on a publication. The basic formula for being in one is to feel out your desires, talk with your comrades, survey the situations you're in, and take action or form projects that make sense to you. When the focus is explicitly not to recruit, a whole world of possibilities opens up, and you begin to realize that you have more power than you previously thought. While it is certainly true that there is power in numbers, there's also power in confidence, self-initiative, courage, and the bonds that come from shared experiences in the streets. A large mass of people may actually be significantly less capable than a small affinity group, simply because people in the latter learn to be strategic with their small numbers and are aware of their capacity together, unquote.
Let's help Twin Oaks grow. Twin Oaks is an anarchist-friendly, intentional community that has been around for 50 years and includes 91 adults and 15 kids. Coming after last week's anarchist news conversations about where anarchists could be going and thriving, it's timely that this week, this longtime project is asking for support. For reasons both environmental and practical, as if those are different, they're trying to buy 105 acres that were just clear-cut. Their plan is to, quote, 1. Increase our dairying capacity by expanding our pasture lands. 2. Have a less fossil fuel intensive and easier time spreading their enriched tofu whey on our fields by making more of them contiguous. 3. Creating a much needed buffer between some of our residences and our graveyard, plus possible neighbors. 4. Clear cut this land no more. 5. Possibly build a new community that will benefit the elders of intentional communities in partnership with others. The covenant we have designed for this land includes all future forestry is done sustainably, no pesticides or herbicides are used, buildings generate energy using renewable resources, unquote.
Media projects. Sing Me Home, a country music compilation for June 11th. As one of the actions to commemorate long-term anarchist prisoners on June 11th, this collection of country music to download is available. Quote, Sing Me Home is an album of folk and country cover songs against prisons and the police. All proceeds from the album go toward benefiting long-term anarchist prisoners in tandem with the June 11th International Day of Solidarity. These are the voices that sing through us, sing with us, sing us home. These songs are about killing guards and getting free, about the concreteness of prison walls, and also how dream and memory are able to travel through those walls, about the pain of missing the ones you love, and about the strength of solidarity. We hope that these songs become part of our lives and that singing them becomes a source of power, unquote.
June 11th, International Day of Solidarity with Anarchist Prisoners video. Another of a series of events for this June 11th, this video is called Communication is a Weapon and is 2.5 minutes of some easily reproducible activities. Well, I can't handle a spray can that well, but you know what I'm saying. In support of our anarchist folks inside. It also shows some pamphlets I haven't read yet.
Archipelago, audio zine. From Resonance, a project that does readings of anarchist and anarchist-related texts, the zine they read here, Archipelago, Affinity, Informal Organization, and Insurrectional Projects, reflects that affinity groups are on people's minds, for good reason. The more we have to deal with liberals and with violence, the more we're reminded that relying on friends is usually our best option. Resonance is looking for support, so for those of you who do social media things, hook them up. They also say that among their upcoming projects are Les Guerrières by Monique Wittig, which seems like a particularly interesting audio project since it's all poetic and shit.
Free Radical Radio audiobook recording, Against the Logic of Work by Apio Ludd. Quote, work dominates most of our lives, so much so that even when we're able to escape from our employers, we often recreate its logic by working towards a revolution or some other abstract ideal of the future. This is the first in a series of short pieces by Apio Ludd, unquote. Apio Ludd is also Wolfie Landstriker.
Podcasts. Horizontal Hostility, Episode 4, Portland Stabbings, ITS, and Nihilist Anti-Civ Terrorism. This podcast continues to be dominated by Gillis, both in the amount that he talks, easily more than the other hosts combined, and in the expert voice he's most comfortable with. He's a transhumanist technophile, if that's not too redundant, so clearly has a value system with no room for eco-extremism. Hearing him talk about the reasons why people would take action from the position of eco-extremism, especially actions that are explicitly counter to the morality that he proudly proclaims, doesn't bring up anything new or surprising. Gillis might be comforting to people who want a lot of clarity about good and bad. He really has those answers, complete with understanding most people and so on. There are some more interesting and nuanced points made by other people on the podcast. For example, connections drawn between the people in ITS and people and tactics we would recognize in our daily lives. This podcast has the same strengths and weaknesses of many conversations between friends, including some people being hard to hear, some people talking a lot more than others, and some deep assumptions going unchallenged. If you're part of the circle, explicitly or implicitly, then it's probably more fun and interesting than if you're not. It does continue to be engaging to note how many flavors the label anarchist applies to.
TFS Radio, Haymaker Jim in Chicago, podcast special. This special episode of The Final Straw doesn't have any Sean Swain reporting and features an interview with people from The Haymaker, a proposed anarchist and anti-fascist gym in Chicago. They talk about being inspired by openly political gyms in Europe and the model of these gyms as part of an accessible anti-fascist movement. They also want this gym as a way to reclaim space in Chicago. They will be having meetups for training in various traditions, collective defense practices, etc. They're currently doing crowdfunding to make the space happen, but are also fundraising outside of anarchist circles also, as part of a public-facing project.
The Final Straw Radio, Burn Down the American Plantation, a conversation with folks from the base. Sean Swain's segment in this episode is a study in how prisoners who have any health issues are thoroughly screwed by the prison system. In this case, an honorably discharged vet who a prison doctor said had to get a new knee 7 years ago, but is still waiting for that knee. The rest of the episode is mostly an interview of two members of the base in Brooklyn, an organizing space that they say is more politically focused than your standard info shop. They just came out with a new book called Burn Down the American Plantation, which they describe as inspired by periodic actions and a desire for continuity. It argues that the Civil War was never resolved and that there was a counter-revolution during Reconstruction, which was consolidated by the prison industrial complex. It further argues that resistance in the U.S. should move away from protest and toward revolution in the Rojavan model.
Anarchy Radio, June 6th. This show was not released late after all. Cliff, Ian, and Kathin host. Cliff starts off with talking about the nihilism and poetry of the Portland Stabber. Conversation moves the manipulation of the story, how it became national even though racist murders happen frequently. Kathin says anarchists are clearly not nihilists. Initial caller hijacks the show. Role of media in encouraging antisocial acts. The hosts note the predetermined roles that people fall into in the face of media events like these. How there is no creativity or challenging of the social control narrative. This is an analysis that could be more broadly applied. Science news. The physical impact of social activity. The hosts have an interesting diversity in the response to a vague, controversial, hypothetical call-in question. To my ear, Ian and even Kathin seem to allow for the ITS perspective. Cliff doesn't respond to it. Interestingly, not surprisingly, there's more life and controversy in this episode than in any in the past months.
Topic of the week. Naming the horror. This week's topic is a question from our sister site, anarchy101.org. Check it out if you haven't already. Do you tend to call what you're against the totality, civilization, power, capitalism, the state, kyriarchy, society? I have gone through stages of using capitalism, civilization, and Christianity as the thing I was railing against. Is it more useful or harmful, and in what circumstances, to combine all the bad or separate things out? What are your thoughts, Ariel?
I feel like naming the horror is an inevitability in a politic like ours. At some point, you start to have the conversations about what it really is that you are against or want to change or want to be different or you know, want to affect in your life or things like that. But at the same time, there's this blanket way that as anarchists, we are against all that is, all of the big things. And I think even just to kind of maintain your sanity, sometimes it's easy to step back and like name it all a thing and point to it all as bad and be able to kind of move on with your day in terms of survival. I guess I've been a fan of society for a long time because for me, it's not just the state and capitalism, but I also think that a lot of people are implicit in those systems and benefit from those systems and would like to continue to benefit from those systems. And so it's not just as simple as these large, nameless, faceless, all-encompassing entities. And society kind of seems to sell that for me. Mm. Those are my first thoughts.
Yeah, when I think of this question, I think about who is it that you're exactly talking to or having those conversations with?
Sure, context matters.
Because I definitely don't feel the need to use these terms at all unless, I guess, I'm drawing a drawing on poster board and preparing for a rally or something. you know, it's like... I don't really talk to non-anarchists about anarchist topics anymore, and I don't go to a lot of protests holding signs, so I like each of these terms, I guess, in different contexts, but in general don't use any of them in the context of talking about our problems or whatever. But I guess this is that weird thing, you know, where you can almost describe an anarchist trajectory in terms of, like, what it's like decade one, what it's like decade two, what it's like decade three.
Sure.
And I'm approaching the end of my third decade.
Right.
And, yeah, I feel like at the end of your third decade, you don't necessarily talk about the anarchism necessarily.
Sure.
Instead, you're having, or what it feels like I've been doing the past 10 years, is having fights about what my anarchism means versus what other people's means. Just this week, I don't know if you caught this, just this week we were accused during a different podcast of being a danger to North American anarchism.
Yes.
This is our general projects. And so that to me reminds me, that seems to be like a third decade problem.
Yeah.
Whereas the problem of what do you call it seems to be a like first decade problem.
Yeah, I could see that. It's interesting that you mentioned talking to non-anarchists. I do frequently.
About these topics.
About my politics. And I never use big concept words like that when I do, because it's very clear that it's too much. It's not specific enough.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
It's not coaching and examples.
Absolutely. I mean, even sometimes just talking about the state. Mm-hmm. And talking about statecraft, and you can kind of see the gears working or the eyes kind of confused, and because regular people in their daily lives don't talk about the world around them like that. This definitely only happens with other anarchists, and I feel like mostly it's just a shortcut when you're trying to fill in, which means I also then have to be careful about who I use it with. Make sure I'm in a room with people who are going to make the same assumptions that I am.
Well, I will say I'm also pretty friendly towards the term society. And that's because society speaks to a problem that actually is under-theorized, which is that problem of the gap that happens from when you're doing organizing or you're trying to reconcile a task from a friendship group to beyond a friendship group. In other words, society represents that transition of how you deal with people when you know them intimately and how you deal with people when they're either strangers to you or not friends.
Sure.
And to me, society speaks to that whole cluster of problems around that gap. And so I like society as a term that describes, like as soon as you live in a world where you have to deal with society, meaning that on the other side of that particular type of abstraction, you're living in this world. And I like that. I feel like that is fairly useful. But then I also use the term capitalism because I feel like that describes mostly what we're experiencing as the problem that we have to deal with day in, day out in this world. I have a job. Capitalism.
Right.
And this is, you know, and of course, as a someone who's hostile to Marxism, you know, it's hard to not use that term that sort of seems to be owned by the Marxists. But anyways, that's sort of the two terms in that list that I use the most frequently. And then civilization would be my third term.
I like capitalism because I feel like...
The term capitalism.
Yeah.
Not capitalism itself.
No, I find that pretty distasteful. Because I, it's one of the few words where I feel like we all generally kind of, no matter how many people are in the room or how big the tent is, we all kind of generally agree on what that means.
Well, yeah, this is, of course, also the reason why I don't use the term.
Because absolutely sure it is.
Because there's a lot of our friends who want to use the term anti-capitalism or anti-capitalist movement and include a whole bunch of people who I want nothing to do.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, I have found that anti-globalism was coming into fashion as I was growing up as a young anarchist, even though I was already older. And I found very quickly that mostly I didn't want anything to do with the anti-globalists,
No one really uses
it anymore. But it was like, it was a simple term, it would seem, and we all knew what it meant. And sure, all these things that we're going to attribute to globalism are bad. And so, yeah, sure, you can be an anti-globalist. And then the more that you're in it, the more that you realize, oh, actually, no, not at all. And so I guess I would say there, I would find a distinction in there between being okay using capitalism as a shorthand versus associating myself with anti-capitalists. Yeah, there's just a difference there. But this is what happens when people talk.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Getting to know people isn't always advised.
No.
So you talk to non-anarchists.
Uh-huh.
Do you feel like mostly they're interested in the ideas and you just lose them in the details, or?
It ranges from people who know me and have an interest in me. And so they're willing to go all the way down the path with me to hear me talk about a thing that is foreign to them, all the way to people who don't know me and I'm the strange animal in the zoo that they didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm.
And usually with the people on that side of the extreme, you don't get very far because... You know, they have to ask all of the very simple, obvious questions immediately before you can actually have any conversation about anything. What do you mean? You know, you have to have cops and you have to have somebody has to be in charge. And, you know, who's going to just all the things that you would think. And the context usually decides whether or not I'm actually going to bother to engage in that conversation with them. So it just depends. But nobody is interested in the theoretical debate of the details. They usually just want you to tell them how what I want is better than what they have, and that there's a plan that will guarantee them better. And if they can't be guaranteed better, then they're just going to stick with the status quo. And usually it ends up being a fight about lack of imagination. And this is with plenty of good intentioned liberals who are truly, truly frustrated and want something else, but then that's unknown and different and that's scary. So why would we do unknown and different and scary? And so then I'm usually just insulting.
I pretty much skip that step and just go straight to insulting.
I'm familiar with that tactic. It has its moments.
I don't have anything else to say.
I want to ask about the harmful part of the question. Is it more useful or harmful, and in what circumstances, to combine all the bad or separate things out? Where do you see the harmful in either side?
I mean, I think.
Or what do you think the question asker is going for?
I think that the assumptions are clear here, right? So if you're having this conversation, you're sort of trying to say, I'm trying to convince someone of why anarchism is great. So in that context, is it good to start out with this big language like civilization or society? Because you're basically like, you know, even in the in all the terms we've used so far, you're assuming so much about your audience. Whereas if you take, let's say, a perspective like the Institute for Anarchist Studies, by and large, they try to meet people where they're at and try to convince them that they're already anarchists.
Right, yes.
And that would be, that would feel more like the separate things out kind of an approach where you're basically saying, do you know how, you know, we're doing lots of organizing around homelessness and around houses and the fact that we have so much land and so few people, let's say, in southeastern Michigan? Then that would clearly be a time where you're basically, you know, not just meeting people where they're at, but you're doing sort of classic activist recruitment types of tactics.
Right.
You know, whereas by and large, we begin a conversation about anarchism saying we're very excited about these books and we're very excited about ideas. And if you have a similar excitement, then you should follow us down this path. And this path is loaded with these huge towering terms that have bodies of people around the terms, sort of a fan base. And what we're going to do when we're trying to introduce you to this stuff is sort of explain to you why each of these fan bases is ridiculous.
Sure.
And why they're not.
So is there an argument in there that one of those approaches is harmful?
Well, I think that the proof is in the pudding. Like in other words, what's the difference between, let's say, a politics that is critical of society and a politic that is absolutely embracing of society as a social anarchist? Right, so like the IX position, by and large, you could describe as a social anarchist position.
Yeah.
And, you know, for lack of better language or shortcuts right now, we could say that we're sort of talking about an antisocial type of perspective.
Yeah,
so
sort then, of.
So okay. Obviously arguing for one or the other would be harmful if your goal is to recruit people to your position, because that's, of course, the other question. And this is the thing that I feel like a lot of people miss when they're critical of what Anarchist News is trying to do. Anarchist News is not trying to convince people to become nihilist anarchists or to become green anarchists or to become post-situationist anarchists. Anarchist News is trying to say, here is the anarchist discussion. Welcome.
Right.
No matter what you're bringing to it, you probably can take part in this. In other words, we're not saying that you aren't naturally an anarchist, but you probably are interested in anarchist themes. So are we. And here's what's happening in that sense. So the harmful thing would be to say, are we doing something that's chasing people away from even participating in these conversations?
Right.
And to that end, I'll say, you have a good point.
Sure.
Some of these, like the fact that a lot of these conversations seem to attract young boys who are pre-men.
Right.
Well, that is harmful, quote unquote.
That isn't any different than anything else.
Absolutely.
The last time I noticed, there were lots of pre-men young boys in the world.
They seem to have a thrusty energy.
It's true. They're very thrusty. They just thrust themselves right in there, whether you want them or not. So, I definitely, as I get older, I have less patience for the thrusty young boys.
No, sure. But the one thing that they do provide that is hard to turn away is when they're excited about something. They're really excited about it.
Yep.
And that's, for many other demographics, that energy is hard to find.
No, that's true.
Especially in our wry, cynical society that's filled with people who say, oh, I've seen it all before, and this is nothing new. So as much as I may also find young, thrusty boys to be boring, they do bring enthusiasm.
No, it's true. And there is definitely some contingent of that youth that I like having around, because I appreciate their energy, for sure.
Thank you much for the conversation.
Yeah, thank you. Or clever white youth with attitude. That's what the world needs today. Sing songs about the alienation. Hey, hey, hey. Or skinny white boys with nice haircuts. The Weekly Anarchy 101 Question and Some Answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org. This is a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. It has nearly 10 years of questions and answers. This week's question, why, according to some anarchists, is the concept of rights a mistake? So I don't think that rights are magic or that they are discovered or anything. Clearly, people make them up. But do rights really always and everywhere flow from the state?
Don't some rights ideally protect one from the state? Human rights as opposed to legal rights, say. Isn't it okay to have some basic standards for our treatment of one another, and can't that be totally independent of the concept of the state? And finally, can't new rights take political social space away from the state and capital? For example, wouldn't the concept of housing as a basic human right take some space away from the idea that property rights should be primary and form the foundation of the social order? There's a lot of commentary on this thread, but I'm just going to read two of the answers. First answer. Rights always come from the state. The idea that rights should be written into law was developed when people were so pissed about getting stepped on and ruled over by sovereign powers that the governments had to do something. So they made a tremendous shift into a system of politics called liberalism. This is not the same as liberalism as in liberal versus conservative or liberal versus Maoist, in which the law recognizes the rights of citizens. These laws serve to not only convince citizens that they aren't going to be stepped on as hard, but also to ensure that people will appeal for recognition of their rights by the state, or a change in the rights written in law, rather than revolt when they have grievances. It was a remarkably successful political system in which revolt now tends to happen only when the system is clearly fucking people over and clearly not going to change itself. Even then, revolt can be settled by implementing some larger systematic change or having a revolutionary government take over. Anarchists do not want protection from the state. Or, to put it another way, a truly anarchistic life guarantees that one will not be protected by the state and will instead be punished by it. The state offers protection to certain normal, decent, law-abiding, good, productive, etc. citizens in exchange for their preservation, reproduction, and reformation of the status quo. An alternative understanding would be that rights are first and foremost inherent to our being human, and only secondly is this real human essence recognized by the state. I would reject this because no one can point to the existence of these essential rights except in the writings of law, whether international or national. There isn't an inherent human essence, or if there is, it would be a highly paradoxical, enigmatic thing. To appeal to the state for the establishment of greater rights does not take away space from the state. It would seem that only revolt can actually wrench spaces from state control. But even then, state forms manage to creep in through the back door, the implementation of self-management among the insurgents, for example. As for alternative discourse, I don't see the need for one. For anyone to actually achieve the essence of what you are talking about, to live free of the domination of state and capital in their lives, they would have to live fighting against domination and not appeal to it to recognize the importance of their needs or how cruel torture is. In other words, they would have to become a non-subject, and only subjects can have rights. Next answer. I found a sort of interesting comment on this problem about rights at the site for Organize. Quote, "Our objection to rights rests on their political content. Rights are only of use if they can be enforced. So we must ask who decides what rights there are and who will make sure they are put into effect. This cannot be simply sidestepped by more democratic or anarchist forms of decision-making. The idea of rights presupposes that there is a correct answer to be discovered, and that makes it an issue for experts. Anarchists do not believe that there are factual answers to how people interact. It affects everyone in a community, and everyone should participate in the decision-making process. No one is greater expert on you than yourself. Of course, if you want to build a house, you would be foolish not to consult people with expertise in architecture or bricklaying or whatever, but they have no greater knowledge than anyone else in the community as to whether a house needs to be built. These types of decisions can be blurred on occasion, but with rights, we can see a definite difference. Rights are the product of a hierarchical society. If you are in dispute with someone over a clash of rights, you must appeal to a higher authority. When decisions go against people in British courts, they go to the European Court of Human Rights. Regardless of whether they win or lose, they have surrendered control of their own lives to someone else. We are not saying that the idea of rights is a manipulative con by capitalism to divert rebellion into acceptable channels, but it is the product of a capitalistic, individualistic, and authoritarian thinking, which cannot serve as the basis for a society of freedom and equality. As always, if you don't like these answers or have your own question to ask, visit anarchy101.org and join the conversation. This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie, produced and narrated by Aragorn Chisel and a friend. And we thank Ariel for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are available at littleblackcart.com. News and up-to-the-minute commentary available at anarchistnews.org.